Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Valley Heights Railway Museum. I'm going to tell you a story with, at least two layers of story to it, or discovery story. So the top layer is the layer of a modern person traversing up and down the Blue Mountains, and there is such a thing as up and down the Blue Mountains, the encountering of it, and the revelation slowly of the actual true history, and the possibly a third layer, that the history is in another dimension going across. So there's the story, the modern story of discovery, the story of the actual history of the place, and the historiography, so to speak, the way that the history is pulled along, and there's enough at various stages of retelling the story. Certain things are lost, certain things are put together and held together by social glue, but there's a tension in this third category of historiography, a tension between people holding together a story and why those people will be holding it together, and a camaraderie and empathy, the ideas, sort of like a rejection area along there. So I'll just try and talk about, so let's describe the Blue Mountains. So the Blue Mountains is basically a raised dome of etched sandstone. So this 300 million years ago, there was the world's most massive river, 100 kilometers wide, much 10 times mightier than the Amazon, 10 times greater flow, 10 times greater rainfall, 10 times greater, not catchment area, but you know, these huge mountains, Himalaya mountains, this huge river flowing down, left a creek bed, a riverbed of a kilometer thick, and by the time the Australian continent moved up over a gentle hot spot, and gently bubbled and percolated a mountain range which stretches from the top of Australia all the way down to the bottom of Australia, called the Great Dividing Range. This chain of mountainlets or hills with various volcanoes along as it hits the hot spot. And these are not, you know, these massive St. Helena pyroclastic volcanoes. These are just gentle volcanoes, a bit like in Hawaii, but even more gentle than this coming up. And so this has lifted up this dome of sandstone, or, you know, central strip of sandstone. So you can imagine, I'm just trying to put it into your own world. Say if you are gardening and your hand brushes against, or your leg brushes against a thorn or bush, and scratch bubbles up, that lift up them. And even though in your skin that's a barely felt lift, on the scale of the earth, this is a mountain range. And that's the Blue Mountains. And of course it's a river stone, so it's been put together by gently patted together rocks. And to say, as you play in the sand, on the beach in a sandcastle, the water comes along and erodes. And so the Blue Mountains has the second largest canyon system held with it in its world. It's not just canyons, it's these complicated creeks which go a short 100 metres one way, then turn right 100 metres and then goes left, and you know, it's just, and so just to the south of us from here is the Blue Labyrinth, which is it's a bloody complicated thing to get through, I must admit. I think it's an aptly called thing. And so there are, in all this sort of fractal patterns, these lines, ridge lines, which you can go along, which can actually just let you stand at one point. It's like one of these fantastic jigsaw puzzles, or these puzzles go across and just walk with a few bends right across the Blue Mountains. And Discovery of that is something which is a fantastic book, written by a friend, a friend of my wife's father wrote this fantastic book. And so it's perhaps the Aboriginals, perhaps people knew already, but there was an official crossing. That's where the crossing to not discover, but to claim ownership of the discovery there of the crossing of the Blue Mountains. And this crossing was basically a road. Now, in terms of a road, do not think of the road that your car drives on. Think of a road in a paddock, on a farm road. Okay, that this, it's a dirt road with some gravel on it. There's occasionally one or two really small bridges built by convicts, going along it. And it does some real steep, bending up, and then it gets up onto the ridge proper, and it just travels on this ridge all the way up. And so this is setting you the geographic scene for this place called Valley Heights and the train stations. So I'm giving you this situation. Now, of course, this we're going to go back into the train stations. We're going into the modern history. This means that as you're driving up, you're driving to Springwood, and you pass this fairly small, there's Sun Valley, which is an inverted volcano, and further up there's Valley Heights. So from this valley, the heights of it. And there you see, there's Valley Heights Station. The station is rather close to a place called Springwood. Why would you have it there? How come that's there? You might ask. You look across as you're driving along the road. So at the moment, there's, with investment of over billions of dollars, unbelievable investment, they've built a four-lane highway with traffic lights on it and stops and bends and cattle rails, concrete in the centre of it and bends and... It's been building at least for 15, 20 years. People have been working on it, and they finally got a fairly decent road. It's not a fast road, so 80 kilometres max. I think 80 kilometres max you can do on it. So that's really like between a freeway, somewhere between a suburban road and a freeway, you can travel up here. And you travel up along this line, a ridge. Basically all the villages of the Blue Mountains in a nice line. So the Blue Mountains is a massive national park. When I say massive national park, there's a chain of national parks which are pretty much the size, when you all add it up and add it all together, you say, oh, that's the size of Britain. You can in theory walk this huge length of national parks. I don't know quickly how it goes. So there are some really remote sections of the national park. Even at just 50 kilometres, you can get to places where very few people go. They're not necessarily difficult parts to go. People just don't tend to go on it. So I've been lost, gone up a few ridge lines to find out where I was. And you go up to a ridge line and you find evidence of an old... not campfire, but where people have stopped for a while. You look at it and you see a discarded bottle and you say, oh, that's a long time. That's a strange shaped bottle. It's got foam, very faded foam on the outside of it. And you remember, oh, back in the 70s they had these Coke bottles where it would be a foam cladding on the outside of it, or a foam bottle where before they had actually done the computations, those lumps they put on the bottom of bottles before they came on. So you can see some of the rubbish, and look, there's not rubbish everywhere. If you're out in the bush, you tend to look for signs, and you go for a trail, and you can sort of tell the difference between a human trail and a wallaby trail. That's the major trail. And of course, wallaby trails are bloody dangerous. Okay. And so going up there. But, so that gives you an idea that you've got this one road, go up, look at Valley Heights. And over the years, you've got small kids, you take them to the museum, and the main thing is to look at the trains and stuff like that. A little bit of a story goes up, but not a lot of story goes up. And over the years, they have Santa on one of these trains. And so this little museum at Valley Heights is up there, and there's a round shed just straight out of Thomas the Tank. So it's sort of made famous because there's a Thomas the Tank round shed and round table, and rails up, and there's a couple of trains there that people looked after. You know what? Sort of now as I talk about it, there are trains that they've restored there, and I don't know where they've gone. And sort of there's sort of these histories. So as people get rid of trains, they take them out to the property, and there's one set of historic trams that two old women had gone up in the mountains and taken them up and built their house around them, and then they bought the house and unbuilt the house and restored the trains, sort of been preserved from the weather. They had a similar tram park in Melbourne where you go and there'd be all these old trams and people go in it, and then sort of vandals got into it. So people are trying to work out what to do with these trams, and so they will now give you a tram or a train for free on condition that you look after it. You can't have it, just scrap it. They will give it to you as a value, but you can't get rid of it. And then they've given some trams, Melbourne trams, to Seattle. So this is one of the things that you're walking around Seattle, and you look up and you go, struth, you're just not going to believe what I've just seen. And it's this little Melbourne tram going along. I don't know, they're not all that special. Although, some of the pictures and the around here are just stunning. So there's the series of train accidents, runaway trains going up the Blue Mountains or down the Blue Mountains. And of course, one of the things is that there's the start of the Blue Mountains is a monoclimb, so it's a real treacherous zigzag to go up. And then after zigzag, it's gentle, and then after Valley Heights, it really picks up, the gradient picks up. And so you do have this series where there's trains at an impossible slope, not an impossible slope for Switzerland or anything like that, but for Australia. And so you do get the dramatic stories of runaway trains, and there was a very famous runaway train which went back and caused multiple fatalities, and they just buried the people where the train was, and that formed the Emu Plains Cemetery. So at the base of the mountains, we've got this place called Emu Plains. And why it's called Emu Plains, it's a huge story for it. And so you've got these runaway trains, and so there's a feeling of heroism and pioneerism with these trains, where various people have done heroic acts to save people's lives. The trains and this Thomas the Tank world go out of condition. And so it's really sort of an island of Sodor sort of experience on the way going up there. So with the train controller, it's a benevolent institution, and that benevolent institution really, I must say, it hasn't disappeared, because there was an incident in which where some of my students who had coached looked after this person on the train line, and then much to our surprise, the train organisation company came to award a medal to these people who looked after this sick woman on a train. They just went up and looked after her, and then went about their business, and then they used their footage to track it down. It's still a very important part of the train culture, heroism, and heroism would be in a hymn. So you have this story. So I've pitched this, what happened is that on the radio they said, there's these talks, come along. I think a few weeks ago. On Father's Day it was free, but come along nonetheless. And I dropped my wife off at the birthday party, going past the train museum. Let's go to it. And strange enough, my son didn't necessarily want to go to it, but you know, sort of decided to anyway. And then I sat in, and it's one of these things where you go back over time under different circumstances, and you get the full picture. And so we went into a talk by this, I've forgotten his name, and this is the entire thing, it's a mental thing. He's talking about the Skarrat Brothers, and so there's a Skarrat Street up here in Glenbrook, and there's places you can walk to, and in Glenbrook, there used to be, before they really worked out how to do it, there used to be a zigzag, that's where the train goes forward and backwards over several things, over a grade to get up a hill that doesn't go straight up the hill, it zigzags across the hill. They have a zigzag. And there's all these stories when you get into it, there's their famous people or their politicians, and there's so much politics, intrigue, heroism, all this going on. But we went to this thing about these people who... there was an enormous storm, the track was washed away, and these brothers came out and ran down at full speed and stopped this train. And this sort of the historic interest in that, the papers reported it as a speeding passenger train, but when it came through, it was a goods train. It mustn't be going that fast. It wouldn't have been that disastrous anyway. But the end result is the Skarrat Brothers were hunted up, given a £25 reward. So this is in 1906. And there was a dramatic thing of these 50 volunteer rail workers who went up and fixed the track and got it going within... 18 hours before they could get trains going just through this tunnel. So, Glenbrook Tunnel, and it's still out there in the bush, but I'd find it hard to find it now. There's a tunnel gully, and it goes under the road, under the freeway, and stuff like that. And it's a very long tunnel, which goes through several angles. So, don't ask me why. I don't know how it does it. But why you'd bend, put it, so the tunnel went up at a fairly steep gradient inside and at an angle. So that combination made it quite a treacherous tunnel. And apparently people asphyxiated in a goods train, asphyxiated in the tunnel. We don't know whether it's closed, but there's ghost stories associated with this tunnel. But I suppose the story for me, being this across, is... this person who is following this track, is following the track, this four-lane highway, pulls off, goes to Valley Heights. It's actually a little difficult to get into the actual railway museum. I missed it initially, and doing a U-turn with the big precipitative gullies here is sort of just a wee bit scary. So I got back into it, and there are two rail model railways. These are HO scale from the 70s, where there's little railways and the little trains go around in circles for some reason. And this is something which is big. About 10 years ago now, it's really disappeared. I don't know, for some reason, gaming, there's the railways. There's still enthusiasts about it. It's little railways, and this goes around and around. So if you saw one, did the lecture on the 1906 rescue, and there's sort of other tragedies, people dying, you know, poems being written, you know, books being written about this thing. It's a really interesting thing to go. And then went in, going into my back, there was a second room there with another rail thing, and you'd look into it and you'd say, oh, I recognise it. Oh, it's actually a scale model of Valley Heights. So Valley Heights is a small section of, the Rail Museum is a small section of rail, about 2 kilometres from Valley Heights Station, which is a suburban station or mountain station, you can pull off, and there's this old steam roundhouse. Yeah, it's sort of a bit of a head scratcher to why it's there. You know, why do you have so many engines in this roundhouse? And you would see it's the same scale. Now, the interesting thing is there was an old, well, I could definitely say old guy, possibly early 90s or something like that, telling you about the place. And he was there, just standing quietly and not trying to tell you too much. And you discovered, you say, well, that's the scale. And I was able to say, was that slightly out of scale? And he said, yes, that's 10% the wrong size there and stuff here. And then eventually he just lets you discover, and you discover, oh, this is the Valley Heights, the suburban one, but as in old. And it was in an old section, but again, he would explain that, you know, we couldn't fit it in the room, so we had to actually cut out a kilometre of track in the distance here. So that was explained. And then you'd observe, and then it's something which would hit you straight away. And you'd see on this picture a trestle bridge up to a height of, or say 6-10 meters up, and up, and it'd be a hopper. And what had happened is that they'd constructed at Valley Heights a zigzag. And that, but we'll have to slow down and tell you the actual story a bit further. So, what's four lane highway back in the day before 1890 something like that, was indeed just the highway was basically a farm road. So it's sort of like if you don't have anything in the outback, but you've got a farm and you drive a kilometre or so into the farm, a lot of the road into farms are these farm roads. They're unsurfaced, not surfaced, stuff like that. So there's this farm road coming across, and there's basically I'll tell it in order. There's a picture, historical order, not the order I discovered it in, a model with a photograph of this station. It was the original Valley Heights station. So if you imagine a modest suburban house with a veranda on it, it was pretty much, the station was of that much. There was a deck possibly 15 metres long at max, three stairs down. It's a very small station. And in the back was an inn, the Valley Heights Inn, a very, very famous inn. The inn was owned by a politician. And the politician called, who was his name? I don't know, Edgar. I can remember the name, Edgar somewhere. So he lobbied in the railway railway people. So the railways were really linked in, and still linked today. Transport is still very much linked in politics. The politics and transport is just, you know, if I told you, you'd be stunned. But it's linked, and he encouraged the trains to stop for a while at Valley Heights, and the passengers there would be Valley Heights, and they would have no recourse but to eat dinner and have drinks and refreshments at the inn. So it's sort of this way that the trains actually did a kickback to it. So these trains going up the mountains from Penrith, through this complicated thing, you know, a full day's journey, it seems, or several, better half of a day, 8-hour journey, to travel 40 kilometres, so that's a bit of a head-scratcher, I suppose. It would be very light, but as the trains got even ever so slightly heavier, they were a bit more serious, they had the problem that the grade between Valley Heights, and going upwards to Katoomba, which Katoomba is the very famous place where you can look out over the big canyon systems, like this huge canyon system. People don't really recognize it, but it's like a green Grand Canyon. It's like this huge system. It's just amazing to look at Katoomba. That's the top or higher up in the mountain. So Katoomba's 1,200 meters up. Valley Heights possibly 400 meters up, that distance there required two trains to pull yourself up. So at a point you had to have a second train to pull you up the mountain, and then that second train would couple, and the two trains would work together. So you would have two trains pushing you up, and from 1895-ish all the way up to when they stopped using steam trains, that's a bit after World War II. They have to have two trains. And so what happened is they had to have a place to store and coal 12 steam trains, which only did an inglorious task of assisting the merging of proper trains from Valley Heights up to Mount Victoria. So in 1906, the government built a roundhouse to house 12 trains as per Thomas the Tank type of thing, with a round table, and they had a coal zigzag. And I'm just going to go here. Does it sound that I'm back again? I just had to interrupt to hang up the second round of clothes. It's been raining for a couple of days up here, and it's a beautiful sunny day with heaps of birds, and it sounds like dogs barking at the moment. So I'm back again discussing the Valley Heights story. So I was building up the view of Valley Heights and the Blue Mountains as this raised scar which runs down the length of Australia from Queensland, this sort of pointy peninsula which points upwards like a finger, right down to the base, if you can imagine the base of your palm, sort of off the side there. And then this raised thing erodes very much, giving these complicated valleys which go up, and forces the trains eventually, which we talk about, to go up this steep run in 30 grade, which apparently is a horrible grade for trains, requiring two trains. So there's two aspects of it. One is the hidden nature of Valley Heights due to the geography. The other thing, that the road goes close by it because there's only one way up there. And Valley Heights started off with the political story of a money-making venture, but as things progressed, they had to get serious and store the 12 locomotives there to haul the stuff up. And they had a fairly good repeat job of using up a fair amount of steam and coal to go up. So they had a coal loading station, they had the roundhouse to locate the 12 engines, and they had this zigzag. So it would go from the roundhouse, which would be down up to the level of Valley Heights, some kilometres away, and then up another kilometres up for another couple of metres to a heightened thing, so a fairly high track up, and then up to a trestle bridge, long trestle bridge, another couple of kilometres, 1 kilometre or so, trestle bridge up high to the height of a house, and at which height the coal trains which would come in would deposit their coals in this long hopper, say 50 metre long hopper with 5 chutes at every 10 metres, and your train would come up and it would be cold, and as it came up to be cold, it would dump its ash, and there would be an ash pit, and people would go inside the ash pit and shovel the ash into another little push vehicle, which would go and dump the ash. So coming out from Valley Heights at 90 degrees was this ash ridge of old ash from the train stations. And so Valley Heights, if I can paint it to you, in 1988, so it was operated from 1906 and stopped operating in 1988, there was the roundhouse, a zigzag and trestle bridges up to this large coal station. So this, say, if you can imagine, I don't know how big your houses are overseas, about three or four suburban houses width across, without gardens, actually, ridge, big multi-story thing for holding the coal. And so the trains would go up and be encoaled and enfueled, ready to do the monster push from Valley Heights up to Katoomba. Once it's at Katoomba, it's just downstream. I would imagine, oh yeah, there's a similar operation on the other side of the mountains for getting things up. And so this is your method. So in 88, there's inside deals. So what happens is people can tell that the real estate's going to go. People approach the government and do some deals to keep the citizenry out. The citizenry said, look, this is the stock. I think that it's 12 engines. You don't get this type of thing all the time. Let's see if we can conserve it. There was a vote, elections on it, Bicentenary Project. So Australia was 200 years old in 1988. And so they managed to maintain it. However, with all these things, the contractors aren't angels, and the people paying the contractors aren't angels, and so a oxy torch was left on when there were the people in ready to take the place apart, and this was left on, and it caught a small fire, and the small fire then caught on and burnt this large coking station, this coal station, down. So this is something you'd only see if you actually saw it in a model, a reconstructed model. And of course the people don't have the idea, and the idea was to break this, well, they don't say it, here they say it was an accident, but my overall view from having watched this over and over again, and that is to accidentally, in quotes, smash and destroy a historic thing and expect to break the citizenry's belief in it. And of course, people said, no, we'll still keep it, we'll keep on doing it. And so we, in your train ride, from this roundhouse, you go a couple of kilometers up to Valley Heights, a couple of kilometers up to the zig, and then it's not explained, but there's the zag, which has been burnt down, so burnt to the ground, and the expectation is to, what would be to crush these poor people's spirits from 88. This is now 2018, so that's a good 30 years after, the people are still here. It's not a lot of money, and it's not a well-advertised tourist spot. And the experience is sort of cut down. It would be a fantastic tourist spot if that coking station was still there. And in essence, I suppose it probably wouldn't even meet planning regulations now. You couldn't rebuild it because it would be outside planning regulations. People would protest about it, and there's obviously no use for the coal. But there's this entire process, and so there's all these relic stuff here. You can go around the bush here. You can see relic gullies, train gullies, where people had to build trains to build the train tracks and stuff. There's ancient tramways stuff. You go along the bridge, the bush. You can see old relic foundations of houses, train stations, houses, and all these types of stuff. But it's a bit of a story that it's something that you can't see very much, and there's this long time process of seeing it. So your average citizen won't see it and won't see the story, and it's only this one in a thousand citizens who come back several times, come back and see it through here. They can't get their whole story. So perhaps this is the full story of going across. To get up to my podcast, the therapeutic limit, so I'm going to read the Valley Heights Locomotive Depot celebrating 100 years. So that would be in brochure which has been produced in 2006. And that's a quote, and they have a picture of Valley Heights. Oh, and I can now recognise it. Bloody hell, by talking about it, I can actually see a picture of the coking station, the coal station, a train underneath this coal station. Oh, it is an impressive structure. It's there. It's gone. It was very satisfying to keep the trains running. Harry Cross, employed at Valley Heights Depot from 1952. And it's, you know, my godfather. I can see now what it is. But all of the trees and the foliage around the place have gone. Yeah, but this coking station is a pretty amazing thing to see. Wow. I didn't see where it was. It looked like some sort of suburban building it's up. But that's it is, and I can now describe it to you. It itself is two stories high on the trestle bridge, and then a further two stories, so it's four stories up, is this coal station where they supply the coal for it. And so where it's stored. And, and you can also see where the water towers are. I didn't see it. I was looking at the photograph. The 1950s story. So let's, oh, there's another picture of it. I didn't see it. Oh, God, I saw it now see it. And the original railway line, 1867 to 1912. The original line crossing the Blue Mountains was built and opened to the weatherboard, and now now Wentworth Falls. Okay, in 1867. Further extensions were progressively built and opened, reaching Katoomba in 1868 and Lithgow in 1869. This was a single line operation catering for both up eastbound and down westbound trains crossing the Blue Mountains. On arrival at Penrith, down trains required the assistance of a second locomotive pilot for the climb to Katoomba. The line included many small stations, some with passing loops or sightings to allow safe passing of trains travelling in the opposite directions. In 1875, a platform known as Edgar's was provided for the colonial treasurer, Mr. Geoffrey Edgar, who was the owner of the Welcome Inn in this location. Ah, this is Valley Heights, isn't it? In 1877, Edgar's platform became known as the Valley. In 1890, it became known as Valley Heights. The line was duplicated from 1902 to 1912 to provide separate lines up and down trains. The final section via Glenbrook Gorge was completed in 1913. Wow, and there's a picture of the roundhouse in the heyday, and all the trees are cleared from this area, mate. It's been an amazing thing to see, and see these coal boxes. Valley Heights steam era, 1913 to 57. Yeah, steam was to 57. Reconstruction of the Blue Mountains line saw a duplicated line we have today, opened in 1913. As a result of the new line, the need for providing pilot engines was no longer required from Penrith. Instead, the necessary was transferred from Valley Heights. Ah, okay, so there used to be pilot trains there. Valley Heights Locomotive Depot was already in service in December 13, but not officially opened until January 14. The depot was home to locomotives that had a crucial role of piloting or assisting trains up the steep sections from Valley Heights to Katoomba. Pilot engines were placed on the lead of the train engine to cover a specific area of track. The pilot engine on arrival at Katoomba would be detached from the train, returned on a turntable, and returned to Valley Heights, where it would be used to further duties. The coal stage was an important part of the depot. The steam locomotives needed coal as fuel. The coal stage at the source from where the steam locomotives were supplied their fuel to burn. The result in the generation of steam which powered the locomotives. Beautifully put. Isn't that so well described? The coal stage was a timber storage bin with a capacity of 400 tons supported by timber trestle. Coal was hauled from the coal storage siding to the coal road and then propelled back across a steep climber trestle to the top of the bin. Oh, so there's actually... The coal stage remained until early 1960 when it was demolished. Okay, well that's not the story I was told. I was told a different story. Isn't that amazing? So I was told a different story. In the signal box was a crucial piece of infrastructure vital to the movement of trades across the mountain. The signal box was a three-story brick and timber construction comprising of 48 levers operated by a signalman from the top level. The signal box controlled signalling equipment, track work and train movements along the line and the depot to the station. In December 1951, the top level of the signal box was destroyed by bushfires, resulting in operations being relocated to the ground floor above the signal box as originally built. Tour of the locomotive depot. As the signal box, the locomotive depot was a crucial piece of infrastructure, part of the operation of the Blue Mountains Railway and movement of the trains across the mountains. The depot provided accommodation and facilities for the locomotives based there and the crews restored to operate the trains. It's interesting that story, that it's interesting you get a different story from the bloke there about the oxytorch and it burning down. It's hard to believe it burning down. The depot included a locomotive yard, 10-bay roundhouse, 18-metre turntable, an elevated coal stage servicing the pits and walking facilities. In the 1940s and 50s, where the depot was the peak period of operation, during this time about 80 staff were employed at the depot. An average of 30 trains during any 24-hour period needed for piloting from Valley Heights. Valley Heights locomotive enjoyed a busy, dynamic period during the 1950s, the decade of a time of great change for the railways in the Blue Mountains, with the end of the steam era and the beginning of a cleaner, more efficient electric train. Electrification of the Western Line beyond Penrith began in the 1950s. Once electrification began, steam engines were destined to become part of history. Finally, on February 2, 1957, steam operations for Valley Heights came to a close. Below left, the electric version begins as the locomotive 4612 settles into her new home, whatever that means. And here's a quote. It was my job to wind the place down, but when I looked at it, I decided I like this joint. I like the people who worked at the depot. I thought I could make a team out of this mob. Alan Parkinson, former district locomotive engineer at Valley Heights in 1956. After the electrification of the line, both the need for pilot locomotive work and the number of staff employed at the depot declined significantly. However, Valley Heights depot has still an important role to play. Isn't that a beautiful story? So that's the end of it, and I can see the coal station. It's a very ugly piece of infrastructure. It's just need to know it's there, it's gone. And it's hard to think that they would have left it up for that period of time. It's due to bush, it's a wooden structure with coal in it. You just want to get rid of all the burning equipment to, oh, so what actually happens is this coal structure, the trains are actually at peak up to a height of four stories. They go at this grade, four stories, then they drop the coal in that, you know, that story is four to three, and it goes from three, third story, in down these chutes into the coal train. So, yeah, there's no money for it, but it's an interesting thing to see. You can see the the picture of this line through the electrification lines is something that you don't have to be an extreme Thomas the Tank buff to want. Something that you wouldn't want to be constructed again. It's interesting to see these people, this world of people being held to it, and those people still about the place, still talking and still having it as a social joint. It's 45 minutes in. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.